We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast. We're in the Champions League quarterfinals, we're top of the Premier League, and I'm here to discuss it all in this international break with Neil Shaw. How are you doing, Neil?
Very, very good, Jack. Couldn't ask for much better at the moment, can we?
No, we can't.
Double excited, Barcelona in the final, revenge.
Wow, you've already planned the pathway.
Oh, yeah. Of course that.
Okay. I see it. Well, no one's better at revenge than Arteta, is it? So I see where you're going with it. I like it. Yeah, we've got to talk about all of that, because, I mean, we were going to podcast before the draw, and now the benefit of this is we can actually sort of take stock and we have a clearer picture of what we're about to look at. And it's definitely not easy in the Champions League. We'll put it that way. We've definitely not got... Not got an easy draw, but we don't do things easy. We never have done, so I don't think I could expect anything else, really. We've got to talk about the Champions League probably first. That was the last game before we spoke. Obviously, wanted to get on straight off the Porto, and it didn't happen for us, so we've got to take a little bit of stock there. Neil, I'm sure you've talked about it on Mike's pod post-Porto, and maybe even one or two others, but the Porto game, Neil, we made it through. In the end, you know, we knew it was going to be difficult. I think you may have felt, you know, the optimist in you that we maybe sort of steamrolled them. But you could tell from the first leg that they were a very experienced team, you know, especially in the Champions League. And that's the one thing we are lacking. We don't really have a lot of European pedigree. We don't have a lot of European experience within this team, other than a couple, you know, Jorginho's, Havertz, one or two others maybe. How important do you think, though, it is for us to first quarterfinal, 14 years? I know it's easy to sort of say, you know, we've got to beat Porto, that's a team we should be beating, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a real credit, probably, to Mikel Arteta to look at where we've come from, you know, eighth place, all over the place, players that, you know, are playing for different reasons, not the badge, you know, all that kind of stuff. He's cleaned out everything. And to get us back into the Champions League and now back into the last eight of the Champions League, which to be honest with some really big hitters in there, it's a tremendous effort from him, isn't it, really? I mean, I know we haven't won anything, nothing like that yet, but to take stock in this sort of little break period that we have, and we don't really have many before the end of the season, I think we've got to sort of take our hats off to him and you know, his whole collective coaching team, really, haven't we?
I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of the credit has to go to Arteta and the coaching team. Yeah, of course the players do it on the pitch, but I think we speak enough of what goes on behind the scenes, and I think he's done an incredible job considering, as you mentioned there, you know, we finished eighth, didn't we, in successive seasons, and then to come from there, not only be doing it in the arguably was the biggest cup competition in the world in football in terms of domestic trophies, but also he's maintained that level of consistency, I guess, in the league, especially after that slight slump just at the beginning of leading up to, you know, the new year. You're right. I'm normally very positive, but actually, no. For the Porto game, I did mention that I thought it was going to be quite a tough one, but I thought that we would get through only simply because of the home advantage, and I knew that our home fans would be absolutely up for it. The noise from the TV sounded insane, to be honest, just incredible. But you know what, Jack, I'm actually glad now. It's easy to say, I know people say, well, you're only saying it now because you've done it, and with hindsight it's always easier, but I actually do feel something about this. The fact that we had been steamrolling teams up till the Brentford game, and you know, I feel that we do need a tougher or a slightly closer affair, because for two reasons. Number one, it sort of erases or eradicates any complacency that might set in. because it's easy to get that way, isn't it? It's like, oh, we win 6-0, 5-0, 6-0, 5-0. And then you think, oh, we'll do it, keep doing it. But you know that's not going to, it's going to come to an end at some point. And I'm actually glad it happened with the game just before Porto, because if we had just, say we'd done that same thing to Brentford and carried on in the same vein, of course we're going to love it. We'd love nothing more than to see us smashing teams like that, especially the way the football we're playing, and we're playing some nice, attractive football as well. But it's almost like, you know, you're going to get brought back to earth very quick, and it could have backfired in quite a significant way. And look, we had a tough encounter with Brentford. I mean, I actually feel, and I know I'm actually loving Raya now, by the way. I mean, that Porto game summed it up, didn't it? I mean, it was amazing. But although, despite Ramsdale's error for the goal against Brentford, I think he made two crucial saves after it. And I think the second one was significant, because the second one, if he hadn't saved that, and it was a great save, by the way, I think it was a header by, I don't know what his name, Cooper or something. I can't remember the guy's name. But if he hadn't saved that, they would have gone 2-1 up. Collins, Cooper or something, I don't know. If that had gone in, Jack, we would have been 2-1 down. And that game, we could have ended up losing that game. And then gone as what mindset the players, after being doing so well since the beginning of January, then all of a sudden to lose one just on the eve of playing, one of the most important games in recent years for us in Europe, you know, it may have really damaged the mentality or the mental state of the players. After that save was actually really significant. It doesn't matter whether it was Ray or Ramsdale or whoever saved it. It was a significant, for me, a moment. Mm. And
I felt the Tony one was really significant as well.
Do you know what? I've got to give it to Tony. That was some strike. Holy yeah. Oh my God. I mean, if that had gone in,
And the weird thing with that one is if Ramsdale can't really win with that one, because if it goes in, you immediately question the goalkeeper, don't you? Like a little bit because of how far out it is. And, you know, we know keepers play as sweepers for us now anyway, so they're always going to be vulnerable to those kind of things. Carry on. But he did make two really good second half. But I wanted to talk to you about a goalkeeper sort of situation.
Sure.
Maybe a coming, not of age, but a sort of a coming out moment for Raya, really sort of feeling that connection with the crowd. But I agree with you on that. You're right on the Brentford one. It may have really set us up for Porto. Similar style, sort of setback maybe in a way that we had in the first leg against Porto and having to overcome it. I think it really prepared us quite well for what was about to come with Porto. Yeah, I agree with you there, Neil. Absolutely.
Definitely. And, you know, they were very streetwise about this setup, really difficult. I thought a very well organised defensive unit. I know we started creating more chances. Obviously, in the first leg, we didn't even have a shot on target, did we? It was crazy. But we started differently, and we were actually penetrating them a bit better offensively and creating some stuff. But, you know, they were set up brilliantly. And the guy that was marking Saka, is it Wendell? I don't know what his name is. Was it Wendell?
It was.
He was superb. I've got to give it to him. He really was. He knew exactly what he needed to do.
And he was penalties.
Yes. And he was suffocating Saka, I thought, and not really giving him anything. But I thought it was we dug deep, you know, like we did with Brentford. We dug deep. And this is what this showed me. These two games showed me that after such a run of brilliance, that we could switch it up and change things for ourselves in game, where things aren't going our way completely, but we're still digging deep. And that, for me, has epitomised the maturity, not only of the players, but also of Arteta too, that we've learned and we've matured. Because this time last season, it all started falling apart for us big time. This is where we lost the league last season. And after dominating it for the whole season, in fact. And this season, I think from that, we've learned. It's the young group of players, Jack, which is the encouraging thing. There are a young group of players. We've managed to secure the contract of Ben White, which is encouraging because it shows that it looks like all these players want to stay long, you know, in the long term for us. So it's so important, that vitally important, that we keep this group of players together, and then they're learning and they're maturing. So I thought it was actually, now when you look back at it, I was looking at the highlights again last night. It was actually a really good game. You don't think so for us at the time because it's just anxiety, isn't
stuff,
it?
Yeah.
But actually looking back at it, it was actually an excellent game. So I tremendous stuff. It was brilliant to get through.
When I watch it back, that's a lot. you know, when I watch it back leading into the penalties, a lot of the commentary was like, this has been a fantastic 120 minutes of football. And I was like, has it? It's been horrible. But you know, we're seeing it from one perspective, which is, you know, it's leading towards this culmination, which you just really struggle to watch in peak moments. I can't remember the last time we had a penalty shootout. I know we had one in the Community Shield, but quite like that, you know, with that intensity. Funny enough, the day before it, Arsenal Roma in the Champions League cropped up on my feed, which was the last, I think it was 2009, 2010, maybe the last penalty shootout we'd won to get us to the quarterfinals in the Champions League, which also was a very, very young group actually at the time as well, which was in Rome. And I remember when I was watching the Porto one, I was like, oh, that was weird. That's weird that cropped up my feed, that kind of thing. But I thought Odegaard was fantastic in the game. I think it's easy to say when we didn't create as much over the two games that he wasn't. But what we did create, obviously Trossard's goal, was really all brought about through Odegaard. But I felt even then, even in the second half, when the game got not away from us, when Porto maybe came a little bit more into the game, but Odegaard was really the one pulling the strings in terms of our attacking outlet. I mean, he had a shot wide and, you know, he was trying so hard. I think he's fantastic. He's just so good, isn't he, Odegaard? I mean, he's just such a great face of the club, I think, from a footballing perspective and on and off the field. I think he's just such a good representative of the club. And he's just a perfect example of what a footballer should be, you know, technically, attitude, effort, everything. It's just such a privilege, I think, to have a player like that in our team, you know. And I know a lot of people say, but it's so hard. It's really hard for foreign players, I think, to sort of quickly understand the mentality and sort of the ethos of Arsenal Football Club. And I was always so impressed by the likes of Omri and Patrick Vieira back in the day that they could do that. And they sort of, you know, became sort of like one of our own, you know, and you just sort of like adopted them as your, you know, as Arsenal through and through. And I think Odegaard's, he's got all of those attributes, you know, he's got everything about him. Like when I see him, I'm like, this is the exact person. And you can tell Arteta believes it too, that sort of is a perfect representation of what this football team is currently and where we're going, you know. I just think he's just an exemplary in everything he does. I just think he's pure class. And on the ball, he's just fantastic. So every time I watch him, I just love watching him. But I have to say, when it got to extra time, I was like, this is only going one way. It, to be fair, as good as we were, I thought Jesus came on and really added something extra, which is encouraging for us, Neil, because we don't really know his fitness status. I mean, he came on in the 83rd minute, so that hints at you that they're still concerned about his fitness a little bit, I would say, because I think all of us were going, where are the subs kind of thing? You know, we need them. And we didn't really get them early enough. Thomas Partey didn't come on at all, for example. But it was encouraging to see that he looked really on it. He should have scored. Keeper saved it, like first touch of the ball. And I thought he looked really, really good. So hopefully that shows that maybe he'll be fit post international break. But Neil, when it got to the penalties, I've got to say I had no confidence, none whatsoever, that we would go. I'm sure maybe you did, but I had absolutely none. I think the first text I got from my dad was, and he just texted me, just not good enough. And I was like, yep, like that, you know. And that was what I said. And it was just this sort of feeling of, well, we've blown it sort of thing, you know. We had to win it in normal time, and the sense of that their experience would run through, and you know, your mind runs away with you a little bit. But the preparation for penalties, I know sometimes it's a little bit of luck and this, that and the other, but the preparation, well, I mean, our penalties were fantastic, and David Raya was absolutely brilliant. And I have to say, I think even before this, Neil, for likes of maybe you and others, I think he was warm into a lot of Arsenal fans. You know, we've seen the progression of him. I think that's fair to say, isn't it? We've really, certainly since the turn of the year, we've seen a goalkeeper that's really benefited from, probably from the little breaks that we've had, you know, where he's been able to sort of solidify his position. But this really felt like, you know, he knew, the crowd knew, collectively knew that this is our number one goalkeeper now going forward, you know, touch wood. And a couple of great saves, but even then, you know, he could have saved maybe one more for being greedy. I mean, he really picked his side, he went for it, took the chance, and he got his just reward. And he was up against a goalkeeper, by the way, who he's been largely touted as one of the best penalty shot stoppers. I think he had an unbelievable record going into that penalty shootout of shot stops in Europe. And he's been largely touted as a big summer move as well for like big money, 70, 80 million, I think they were talking about. So, but it was David Raya, when it was completely David Raya, but fantastic penalties from us as well.
Do you know what? I think for me now, there was one I had absolutely accepted and warmed to, as I said, mentioned, I probably said it too many times now, but I had done. There was just one missing piece of the jigsaw for me, and that was seeing some emotion from him. And when he saved the first one, the emotion, and I thought, that's it. Now, I have fully accepted you. You know, I've got no right to feel that way. Who am I at the end of the day? But for me, just as a personal thing, right, I finally see some real raw emotion from you. And then when he saved the second one, you know, he just what it meant to him. I loved it. And then, of course, you all look at and feel warm about Saliba's celebrations and Gabriel. So it's just so amazing to see. But for me, he was great. You know, you mentioned the two saves he made. He's been looking so much more like, as you said, our number one, he's become the all round, and the calmness with him, and he just looks confident, and he's got the authority in the box. I was always a little bit worried because of his height. I thought maybe for a goalkeeper, he's not at the optimal level, or a minimum level, I should say, for a goalkeeper to be completely effective. But actually, when there's a high ball, he's so authoritative with it. I think it was that one of the second saves that he made, the one that stuck out, that it wasn't just him, also Kiwior did well for that because he helped him out. And you have to give Kiwior, yeah, shielded it.
Body check, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, body check, yeah. Absolutely wonderful work from Kiwior. So a little shout out to him. But I wasn't worried about the penalty. It's really weird. We haven't missed the penalty all season, Jack, including all the ones in the Community Shield. So I wasn't worried. And also, I just thought, you've got to mention, Raya's going to get the headlines. He made the saves. He won us the game. But as you said, we've got to mention the four penalties that were taken. They were all worlds. Saka, who you might feel has not been totally at his level that you'd expect from him, but even him, his penalty was taken with such confidence. He smashed it into the diff. Normally he goes on to the, goes towards the white, I think.
Yeah, he does usually. To the left.
But, oh my God, the power he got from that, you know, amazing. And Havertz.
Delay as well, yeah.
Yeah. And Havertz is one as well. I mean, God, what a cheeky penalty. But you think if anyone might miss it, might be him. But no, he didn't. He did really well.
Apparently he's got a very good record, Neil. Apparently he's got a very good record.
We've only seen
two from him, but apparently there was some stat that came out. He has a very good record of penalty, so hopefully he keeps that up.
So it all came together beautifully. Oh, and you were talking about Odegaard. Also, don't forget the goal that was disallowed. What an amazing chip.
Yeah, so unfortunate, wasn't it, the pull on the shirt? Who made the pull on the shirt? Was it Havertz, was it?
Yeah. But
was it Havertz?
Yeah, I mean, all right.
No need almost.
It was Havertz. I mean, yeah, technically you might. Yeah, all right. So, but I don't think him doing that made any difference to...
No, it's almost so frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it still would have gone in. It was just
it would have done.
But you're right, Odegaard was fantastic. His penalty was good too.
He's our best penalty taker, to be honest.
Yeah, and he kicked it off. And that shows me that, yes, he might not be a loud captain, but he does everything by leads by example. And you're right, you know, he's very good off the pitch. You mentioned Henry and Vieira, but also Bergkamp. There are some parts of him that remind me of Bergkamp so much. Maybe it's a little bit of coolness. And I know that Bergkamp never used to kind of G up the crowd and do all of that. So we didn't need to with those, did we? Because we were so damn good. Yeah. But, you know, there's some aspects, I think just with his technical and his awareness skills, the way he's so aware, how he had that assist for that goal. I mean, there were four of them on him. There was no way through. You know, normally you just wouldn't have a way through. And he just managed to do it. And it's his precision, his awareness, and it's almost like he can see what everyone else can't see. And that's how Bergkamp used to play. People, you know, all the greats have said it, all the greats across the world have said Bergkamp, there's something so amazing about him. He could read the ball that no one else could. His off-the-ball movement and also his improvisation was second to none. And I see bits of that in Odegaard. And you've got to give it to Trossard. That was a great finish as well. Wasn't he? You know, he's selected
through the legs.
Absolutely fantastic finish. And that essentially got us back into the tie. You know, if we had, that was the only goal in the whole 90 minutes. So, you know, we had to produce something from somewhere, and we did it with a piece of brilliance, all round brilliance, I think, for them, from those two players. But yeah, I think Raya for me now, that's it. He's bedded his place in. And it was nice to see Ramsdale getting really passionate as well.
That was nice. Yeah. He was the first one to celebrate with him, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that a lot. I think there might be a understanding here, Neil. Maybe these two games have done it, maybe before it, but there might be sort of a collective understanding here of, he's the number one now, and a sort of more sort of clearer picture of their places. Obviously, Ramsdale, I don't anticipate stays beyond the summer, but sometimes when you've not accepted, because no one ever accepts being second place, but sort of understood that, you know, it's just one of those things, and this sort of thing sort of happens in football, maybe enables you to sort of support the man in front of you more, and Raya in turn feels more at home, and that takes time, you know.
Exactly.
And I think if we could go back, maybe even if Mikel Arteta could go back, I think maybe he'd slightly change the way and the moment in which he came in. You know, if he was going to change the goalkeeper, I'm certain he didn't want that to be sort of the last signing in the transfer window, and, you know, to come in 4 or 5 games in. I'm certain that would have wanted to be an earlier signing, but because of FFP and the way it was done, it couldn't be. And also, I think, you know, the way he's talked about it, about, you know, rotating goalkeepers and substituting goalkeepers, probably in hindsight, that didn't help things, because that puts things in both keepers' minds. Maybe, you know, I don't think Arteta, I think he rarely speaks out of turn. I think everything that he says is thought about, but I think maybe that's one of the ones that he probably could have thought about, and maybe thought, yeah, I probably could have said it a little bit differently. But, you know, it's taken that time. And I remember saying it when Raya came in, and he looked a little bit rusty, made a couple of errors, things like that. I said, what we do have to remember is he has had no pre-season, this goalkeeper, absolutely none. And I compared it to Onana, and I said, look how bad Onana is, who was largely regarded as one of the best goalkeepers in the world at Inter Milan last year. Look how bad he is, because he came in pretty late too at Manchester United. And what Raya is doing with this, you know, one or two mistakes that he's making, I think we may see say something different as he sort of settles. And we don't know, things can happen again, but he was great in that Porto game before the penalties. You know, his handling, his shot stopping, and we've needed him a little bit more in these last two games. Oh, sorry, Brentford was Ramsdale, but in these last few games. And he's really started to show, you know. And I was really happy for Ramsdale sort of celebrating with him as well, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And you have, admittedly, you were right behind Raya right from the start. I remember we were having these discussions. I was more, I think, I was blinkered because of my love for Ramsdale, just his personality. And I just felt that I felt it was so wrong to just shut him out completely. I wish it, I mean, maybe have done in a better way, but you can't, can you? You just can't have two number ones. It doesn't work. And I think you touched on it a minute ago, that, all right, Ramsdale is inevitably going. I mean, it's going to harm his career if he doesn't go. So I don't want it, but I do want it for him, if that makes sense, because it can only help his career. He's not going to get chances now.
Barring injury and things like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Barring injury, of course. No, I mean, what I mean is get a chance beyond the season. I mean,
right.
You know, I think there also, I mean, I don't do gossip talk, you know, I don't, but I heard that there was rumblings that we are starting to look, maybe you'll be looking in the direction, and this time for a number two, not a number one. So, it looks like writing is on the wall for him, but I think that's only a good thing for him. But I think what is important in these last 10, you know, 2 months or whatever we've got left of the season, is if he has now got behind Raya, as seen in those celebrations, that could only help the collective. Because if he's getting, can you imagine if they weren't getting on? That can only be harmful. But, you know, for all the stuff that we don't see on the training ground and all the rest, when they're in their meetings and whatnot, if there's friction between the two of them, that will not be good. If he's fully behind it and he understands that, that can only be good for the collective as well. So this is great. This is great to see. I don't think we could be, Jack, in a better position now for the business end of the season. I think the players are coming back from injury, whereas it was the opposite last season. exact opposite. We were losing players. This time we're getting players coming back in. It looks like, touch wood, that all of the players that are still haven't had any injuries are fit and strong. Hopefully nothing happens in this international break. And, you know, we couldn't be better prepared for a tough run of games. And these two games, I think, is almost like, they're not mock tests because they were both equally important. One took us to the top of the table. The other got us to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. But I feel that also, as a byproduct, they were like almost a mock test of what's to come because we have got some tough games coming up. So I don't think we could be better prepared. So it's great stuff.
Yeah, I was going to get onto that, the squad, sort of where we're at with the squad. Just before we do, it was obviously brilliant to get through against Porto. I mean, I'm always elated when we win, but against Brentford, when Havertz put the header in, I was so delighted. But against Porto, I have to say, I mean, the time changed here. So we were an hour closer to you. So what that meant was I was watching the game during a really sort of peak part of my work where I'm sort of out watching sports from a lot of students around me. And I was like, I cannot focus here. I've got to walk away. I've got a little iPad in my hands and stuff like that. And I just start running around the track like a child, you know, when the final penalty gets saved, you know. I said, I can't help it. It's like really hard to watch this stuff when you're at work. But it was just such a sense, I was so relieved and happy that we made it through. You know, I was so delighted that we did. A lot of people saying, oh, if you make it through the congestion, etc. But on the flip side of that, you know, the feeling of going into a 2.5 week break knowing that you'd be knocked out of the Champions League in a game that you know you're the better team, you know what that does for the mentality of the group, etc. is it can't be explained, you know. And then now we go up against a team that's a real juggernaut, to be honest, a real sort of big hitter in the Champions League. I know they're not having the perfect season, but that actually makes them a bit more dangerous in the Champions League because the league's over for them, basically, bar a Leverkusen collapse, which isn't going to happen. So the Champions League is they're all in on it. And that's dangerous because they can really rest and rotate their players as they do want to freely, a luxury we just don't have the ability to be able to do. So Bayern, I mean, Neil, is this a really tough one? And if you beat Bayern, I don't want to look beyond it. I certainly wouldn't. But if you did, it becomes maybe even tougher with City or Madrid. What's your thoughts on the draw?
I'm happy. I think that we the reason why we support football or a team, and especially the sports that support, I'd say the bigger teams. Across the world, they do it for this reason. We live for these moments. I appreciate and understand and fully take on board with agreement that you know, sometimes people say, no, I don't really want to face this team yet, because, and it's good that we've got this team instead in the draw. We've got the luck of the draw there because it means that we've got a better chance to progress and we can really see what this team's made of. Totally appreciate that and I get it, but at some stage we are going to have to beat the best to be the best. And, you know, for me, I don't think when you look back on history and you look back at certain competitions, you don't really remember the quarterfinalists, the semifinalists, and even the runner-up. You only look at the winner. So it doesn't really matter in that sense. Only in that sense, of course, it matters to get as far as you can, but it doesn't matter in that sense whether you come across a harder team maybe a little bit earlier on than later. Because I know this sounds really stupid for me to say this, but from my heart, at least just for that reason, I'd rather go out earlier if I know that we're going to lose in the final anyway. To lose in a final, you know what that feels like. We know it. We've already been there. Yeah, it's
the worst.
It's horrible. It is gut-wrenching. It's horrible. But, of course, there's so many positives to progressing because it's helping with the mentality, the momentum. It can also help with your other competitions that you could still be competing in. Of course, you want to keep going. You want to keep winning things like Man City are doing. You know, they're doing it with potentially they got on for another treble, aren't they, this season? So, you know, it breeds confidence, isn't it? Winning, that winning mentality breeds that confidence and it almost becomes repetitive and you become familiar with it and that helps you. So, yes, I get the argument completely that, you know, well, it's better to maybe meet the tougher teams later on. But for the fact that we are privileged to be in it, Jack, as you said, 14 years since we've been in the quarterfinal, I actually didn't really mind who we got. I just did not mind. And then when the draw was announced, and I think we were the first team up, weren't we? We were the first team up in the draw, and we got the opponent. And I thought, you know what? Great. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to that. I know we've got a couple of Premier League fixtures. Of course, we've got the biggest one coming up. But actually, yeah. I can't wait to play them in the quarterfinals. I'm so looking forward to it. It's untrue.
Yeah, it's right.
And then I didn't realise that they were going to do the whole, you know, the whole plan, the whole route.
I wish they didn't, in a way.
Yeah, I wish they didn't as well. I actually, to be honest, I didn't like that. But now we know. They've done it, and now we know. And to have the opportunity that potentially we could have a revenge match against Barcelona, that was it. That nailed it for me. I thought, right, I'm completely invested in this. So let's bring it on. I can't wait, Jack. I'll be honest. I can't wait.
Yeah. No, I can't. I'm not very excited. I mean, I do think we've got lots for a lot of people saying, you know, well, I think I saw somewhere, you know, we're second favourites or third favourites for the Champions League. I think I'd put us down as about fourth, to be honest. I think you'd have to say, obviously, City are the clear favourites, Real Madrid very closely next to them. And then I'd probably put Bayern as the third favourites ahead of us, because I'd put us in that bracket of PSG and Barca, you know, slightly above them. I think we're better teams than them too. But and neither of them have amazing European pedigree. Either Barca have, you know, more, but PSG are a little bit like us in that sense. They don't really have great European pedigree. Bayern though do. I mean, Bayern do. And I think in Europe that just counts for a lot. You know, I mean, look at Liverpool. You know, I've seen the worst Liverpool teams win in Europe. I mean, they've been dreadful, Neil. Absolutely dreadful. They can't kick a ball, and they've won in Europe. Because of the back in the atmosphere, the belief that they've got in that competition. It's almost liken it to us when we play in the FA Cup, to be honest. You know, it's just some competitions sit with you, you know, and we're not there. We're not there. But you can only, there's only one way of getting there, you know, you've got to be in it. So, but I'd put us around fourth, and it's kind of crazy that all four of those teams sit on one side of the draw. I think that's definitely got to be looked at, and I think it will be from next season. There's a seeding process that goes on next season, and I think there should be, really. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. I kind of thought about it. I was like, it was almost irrelevant to win the group at this point after the first round, knockout round, isn't it? It's almost irrelevant. If you've won the group and then won your first knockout round, there is no benefit to it whatsoever, which seems a bit odd to me. Seems a bit strange. But Bayern won their group as well, you know, so it just seems a little bit weird to me. But anyway, but yeah, it's yeah, like you, I just didn't want City. I just didn't want City. And even though we might get City in a semi-final, you know, you worry about that if it comes to that. But I really didn't want City at this stage, to be honest. I don't think it would have worked in our favour to play them that many consecutive times. It just doesn't feel like a European tie at that point, you know. It doesn't really. So I personally hope if we can make it further that we don't face them. But if we do, we do, you know, and we deal with it when we come to it. But Bayern, mate, I do think we've got a little bit of proof in terms of away form. You know, I mean, we've won one away game in Europe all season. I think we've got a little bit of proof with how we play away, and there's no harder place to go really than going to Bayern. So, but and our first leg is obviously at home, which isn't always the favoured way of doing it, is it? So, but you know, we've got to bring an atmosphere like we did against Porto, against Bayern in the first leg. And I think they are vulnerable defensively, to be honest. I think they are. I think Tuchel's teams, he knows how to set teams up for two legs. He's notoriously very good in the Champions League. Got to the final with PSG, lost, won it with Chelsea, with a relatively poor Chelsea, to be honest. And so he's a little bit Rafa Benitez-ish in the Champions League. So it's going to be a really tough one. But like you said, very, very excited about it. But that's the Champions League. Fantastic. We're in it. When we come back from the break, it's thick and fast and it's go, go, go. But I mean, in the Prem, Neil, I mean, we had a weekend that was really perfect before we left, isn't it? I mean, we said this is a weekend, you know, we could really do with us winning, which everyone expected us to beat Brentford, and we left it late, but we did it, I think, deservedly, just about. We didn't have a great game, but deservedly. And City and Liverpool drew. What was your thoughts on that weekend? I'm sure you caught a little bit maybe of the City Liverpool game. What was your overall thoughts? Obviously, just fantastic to win. Either way, the result went with Liverpool City, we could probably have made, you know, justification for it in terms of a positive for Arsenal. But was that the result you were hoping for in that one?
Yes, I was. I mean, just to touch on the Brentford game, I think that's another reason why it was so important, because it gave us the opportunity to be top. You know, of course, if one of the other two won, it wouldn't have been that way. But we had to do our bit, and we did our bit. That was the most important thing. And of course, we left it late. Yeah, you're right. I don't think we had the best of games. But as I said earlier, I think it was a good test for us to come across a tougher day, or have a worse day in the office, if that's the saying, and put us up. I think it was a good way of preparing for Porto. I know that sounds really stupid, but it just would have ebbed away any complacency. And we have been found wanting in that department in the past, Jack, where I felt that our players have gone in thinking they're just going to win. And you shouldn't have that mentality at all. So it was a good one for us. And for me, yeah, the draw was the one I was looking for. I was then thinking and overthinking maybe that if a team was to win it between those two, I'd actually rather have City win it, because simply because of the fact that we don't play Liverpool again and it's completely out of our hands. But we still had the City game coming up, which meant we could then kind of mitigate the damage of them beating Liverpool, if I'm making any sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't want a Liverpool win. Yes. That was my feeling on it. City's running is very similar to ours. They have some hard games. Liverpool is on paper easier. Yeah, and I tended to agree with you. You know, they're at Anfield. You kind of expect Liverpool to win games at Anfield at this point. You know, they notoriously do beat City at Anfield, don't they? So I actually agree with you. He just struggles. Pep just struggles at Anfield. I mean, he just does, you know, and to a greater degree than what Arteta does. I know Arteta's drawn there twice in the last 2 years, but if you look at
the role,
we did. I think we were by far the better team for large periods of those games. And when you watch City, I mean, and City came up against a Liverpool side that had a lot of players out in this game, you know, They still allowed Liverpool to sort of come back into it and take control of the game and take a foothold in the game. And Liverpool created a hell of a lot of chances in comparison to what they created against us. So I was watching it. I was like, that's interesting. Even though I have to take it with a pinch of salt because it's at Anfield and I know he doesn't do well there. But for me, just like you, I kind of agree with you. I was like, anything but a Liverpool win, really.
Yeah.
For that one. But well, I mean, where do you think it leaves us, Neil? I mean, it leaves us obviously top of the league. Last time we went to City, late last season, I think City were already top at that point. I think they'd already overturned the deficit, I want to say, when we went there last season with Rob Holding at centre back. Yeah, of course. Obviously, we go there. It's a weird one, isn't it, Neil? Because we go there straight after an international break. Mm. How do you feel? Last time after Dubai, we felt we didn't really feel this. We didn't know. We mentioned we were in such a bad run of form. We kind of hoped that the break would do. I don't think we could have fathomed that it did.
Amazing!
But now you wonder. You know, you never know what a break does or doesn't do for a team. And this isn't really a break as such. It's a sort of break up where players go all over the place. And obviously, we do have a few that have stayed behind, right? Ben White stayed behind, Tomiyasu stayed behind, Thomas Partey stayed behind, Gabriel Jesus stayed behind, Gabriel Martinelli and Gabriel stayed behind, maybe one or two others there. So we've got a little bit of a group there that Mikel Arteta, I know he gave him the week off leading up to the FA Cup games. I know he did because I saw Saka over here in America and things like that. So he gave them the week off, which was probably a wise thing to do. But I presume that group's kind of back in now. I don't know what they're doing because Brazil are at the London training ground, but they're I'm sure, sober training centre. But I'm sure they're back in the group. But how do you feel the break is for us? Because we've got a break off a sort of 8-game winning streak, but a couple of games that were very tough towards the end of it. Liverpool have got a break off of that crazy FA Cup game.
Unreal. Yesterday,
where I honestly, it was a very weird game for me because I hate both teams, obviously.
But I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a very fun game. I was out eating breakfast with my kids and I kind of had it almost silent on my phone, but I was just looking at it every now and then. And John, he never calls me when anyone else playing, but he calls me during the game when United scored the fourth in extra time. And I went, I couldn't work out if he was happy or just wanted to chat. I was like, is this good or is this, I don't know. But yeah, what do you feel? I think ultimately going into a break off a sort of damning defeat like that can also be really bad as well, because it weighs on the mind. You want another game to quickly correct it and you don't have it. It's really hard to judge, but ultimately, Neil, we've got 2.5 week plus gap before we go to, you know, one of the hardest grounds for us, notoriously. But you feel we're in pretty good shape in terms of the squad, right? Obviously, bear in mind, touch wood, nothing happens in the international break.
Yeah, physical attributes, I'm all right with. It's the mental side of it. We don't know what this long break from club football is going to do. We just don't know, because there's no Dubai break, is there, this time? Yeah, you said they've had a week off this week, but then they're all doing international. I don't think he's going to then ship who he's got left to Dubai again. I mean, I wish he might do. Who's to say? But it's unlikely. So I don't know what it's going to do. It could work either way, couldn't it? It could be an advantage because it's actually give them a break from club football. They can take their mind elsewhere for a bit, just have a break from it, and then come back. But it's offer. You see, this is the problem. When you're on a run and you've got the momentum, I think the players are hungry. They want to get on with it. They want to keep, come on, let's bring the next one on, bring the next one on. And if we'd smashed Brentford, and even if we'd smashed Porto, maybe I'd be more in the camp of that side of it, saying, nah, this has come at the wrong time now. Look at us. But because the last two games were a little bit tough and maybe a bit taxing on the players, a bit physically, maybe there were a few that started looking a bit tired from two. But they were both
within Singapore, didn't we?
Yeah. So we had two within the space of 4 days, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
it was really quick games. Turnaround.
Yeah, so it was two within the space of two tough games in the space of 4 days. So maybe actually for us, it might do us good. But these are just the theories.
Yeah, we don't know.
We just don't know. We just do not know what we're going to get. And we've got the biggest challenge of them all. And that's the thing. But maybe that's a good thing as well. I don't know. I think you're right about the Liverpool one, because you mentioned it about Porto. Can you imagine if we'd lost that? Mm. Say we lost it on penalties and then we're off for 3 weeks and the players are like, oh no. We've got the reverse of what Liverpool have got. They've lost a very, just before the penalty, it was it looked like it was going to pens, and then they get sucker punched, especially being ahead in extra time. That was the nice thing about it. I know I shouldn't be saying it was a hate Man U as well, but you know, it's a tough one, isn't it? He said, Jack, can they both lose?
I know, yeah. Yeah, it was weird. I didn't know. All I knew that we all knew we wanted it to go to extra time.
Yeah, that's
for obvious reason. So when that happened, I was like, oh, I'm good. You know what I mean?
Result.
I'm good.
Result,
exactly. And
any small advantage, whether it's a mental advantage or whatever it is, will help us, because Liverpool are one of our rivals now, as is Man City. But I don't know how we're going to be. I mean, I'm hoping that we're just rejuvenated and refreshed for City and we can give them as good a game as possible. I don't know how it's going to look. I would have thought that he will set up as he has done in the last few domestic games. I don't think he's going to tinker with the squad too much. But what will be an advantage for us over the last few games is I think he's going to have more players on the bench that could come on if we need to change things or we need to, you know, we're chasing a winning goal, whatever it could be. You know, whereas we didn't have that maybe 3 or 4 games ago and we had to rely heavily on the 11 or 12 players. I think now we're going to have a little bit more options. I know there is still a concern with Jesus because he's coming on late. You've mentioned the issue with his knee a few times. We don't know how much we can rely on him, but he hopefully will be there, even if it's a 10-minute cameo, which could turn a game, because he almost scored with his first touch, didn't he, when he came on the other
one. We're definitely managing him, but
yeah. So, you know, it could be something as again, it's all fine margins, and I think that's how this game is going to be. I think it's going to be quite a close game. It's going to be fine margins. I don't think I'll be upset with a draw. I don't think I will. Mm. But I just do not want to lose, because I think that will undo a lot of the good work we've done this season if we lose to them. It's a go to the Etihad, and if we get a point, that's progress already this season, because we'd have taken 4 points off them. We haven't done that for years, Jack, against City. That'll be massive for us to get 4 points off. So it's going to be a really tough game. But we have to do it. We have to. And if we win, wow, I think that you know, to be do the double over Man City, who does that these days? I think over them unexpected. No, it was last season, wasn't it? Was it? Yeah. Was it Brentford?
Brentford did it, but Brentford did it when they'd already won the title.
Yeah, they'd already
basically.
Won. I know. Yeah, I get
yeah,
it.
But no, they did it. I mean, they did it. I mean, the game at the Etihad was great from them. I mean, they did
yes.
it. I think Tony
yeah.
scored and they did do it. But
rare for a team to do it, right?
Oh, so yeah. No, it's almost unheard of, yeah.
We've got a great opportunity, but I just don't know how they're going to... It's
going to
be hard.
Pep's doing as usual, and he's pulling out all his big players, you know, Edison, you know, et cetera, saying he's got injured De Bruyne, you know, things like that. What's good about this is, you know, Liverpool doing the same with Darwin Nunez. What's good about this is we're looking like we're getting on board with selectively picking a couple of players with a little precautionary knocks and pulling them out of the international break, because let's be honest, these are friendlies. Liverpool and City for years have done this in regular international qualifying games, right? Trent, I think he's been removed from about 18 England squads, and then people moan why he doesn't start for England. I'm like, well, how can you start the player? I mean, he never shows up for camp, does he? So, you know, Liverpool are notorious for doing it. Pep Guardiola, notorious. And we've never really jumped on board. And what the frustrating thing was, the one time we tried to do it a few international breaks ago, Brazil had this big uproar about us doing it. Mm. And I was like, how are we getting burnt for this when you've literally let City and Liverpool walk all over you, these teams. So it looks good. I mean, with Gabriel, looks like a precautionary, and I think he's going to be fine from the sounds of it. And we've pulled him. And international teams for friendlies, they should just accept it. These are big moments. You shouldn't be playing these friendlies anyway. So if you're going to play them, then allow us to adjust and adapt and sort of get the players break that need it, you know, because they are never getting any rest otherwise. And I think it's disgraceful that they're playing friendlies at this point, to be perfectly honest. You know, in the closing end of the season, these aren't even qualifiers or anything. I just think it's ridiculous. So I had a little look at most of the games for international teams seem to end on Tuesday of next week, which means I presume most of the players will sort of be back in around Wednesday, late Wednesday. Summer end earlier. Italy's last game is this Sunday, so Jorginho, you know, may be back, you know, a little bit earlier, might be back Monday. And obviously I think our game against City is on a Sunday, not a Saturday, right? So there's a little bit there. So, but like you said, both teams, I mean, they're going to be at home. It's a game they also will feel absolutely they need to win, especially after dropping points away at Anfield. They're going to feel like they need to win, and by winning it, they'll feel like they're, you know, in prime position to go and win the title. So it's just a massive, massive game. But yeah, like you said, let's talk a little bit about squad. I mean, where do you feel, we've got like 9 games in April. If you include the City one, which is the 31st of March, but let's say, you know, 9 games in April. Where do you feel we're at in terms of the squad? Because we've got our first 11 that we've been playing right now, which is Kivior at left back. Martinelli, I know he's been out for a couple of games, and I think we missed him, to be honest, and his energy and his pace. I think we have missed him. So hopefully he's back. But then the extension of that, Neil, last season we saw one or two injuries, Saliba and Tomiyasu, and we were kind of done. Do you feel the squad is now more equipped and a little bit thicker to be able to cope with that? Or beyond the injury front, are we more a little bit thicker to be able to rotate for certain games when we're playing 3 games a week with certain players to come in? Would you think Arteta is willing to trust in the likes of Partey, Zinchenko, Jesus, etc., Tomiyasu, Trossard? It feels like the squad's a little thicker if we can keep everyone fit. You need 17-ish, I think, and maybe we're right about there, but we've got to see how much you trust in the likes of, well, Thomas Partey, for example, you know, and people like that. Do you envisage Thomas Partey starting a lot of games from now and towards the end of the season, or is it hard to judge because he's been out for so long?
Jack, it's hard to judge with Partey because, as you said, he's been absolutely, we haven't really had him all season, have we? That's the thing. We've not had him. So, and look how we're done. We're top and we're in, you know, we could, apart from being knocked out of the FA Cup, we're literally unblemished in that way. So it's not something that we're keenly missing, although he's a great addition to have. And if he comes back and he's at the form that he was when he was firing last season, geez, that is some sub to bring on. I think they're all vitally important. The difference is obviously we were losing players last season at this time, but although we're probably gaining players, it's the reverse. We're also in the Champions League, which we weren't last season. So it's almost like we've got a thicker squad maybe, but as you said, we're surely going to have to rotate now. He's going to have no choice. He can't do what he was doing before where we're only having one Premiership game or one game every 7 days or 6 days where he could stick to the same. So he's going to have to rotate. At the very minimum, he's going to probably have to bring on subs a bit earlier if he still wants to start with the same team. So I know there are some players where you think that, you know, it could burn, you know, you could get burnouts. You've mentioned Ben White in the past where when he's played consecutive, he's on great form at the moment, by the way. I mean, two assists against Brentford. I mean, bloody hell. Incredible, isn't it? So he's on great form and he's a certain starter for me. I think if I could just quickly touch on the Man City game, for me, the key battle will be, the key area will be defence for us. And some people have been saying, and quite rightly so, that Saliba he's looked a bit nervous lately. He's not been himself. If anything, Gabriel has stepped up a little bit more recently. So for me, Saliba is a key component. So obviously we know what their attack's all about. And I think he needs to step up. He needs to rekindle somehow. He just has to play the game of his life. And I think if he does that, we're going to be in for a great chance against City. Yeah. So I think for me, that is, you know, we've got 10 other players to talk about. But for me, I think that's the key one, Saliba against City. But let's wait and see. But I think just going forward and talking about the squad, he's going to have to rotate, Jack. Even I have to say that. I don't like changing things when things are working. I've been greatly against it. That you don't, why change it? Nothing's wrong with it. Don't change it. Don't knock out one of the players for Jesus, because actually we've been doing the business without him recently. So don't bring on Jesus and sacrifice our habits. Don't bring on Jesus and sacrifice Trossard, which he did last season when we were actually on a good run. But he will be required because, as you said, on some weeks we're going to have three games on a row. I think it's only a good thing that all our players are coming back. The only one that now that is missing, isn't it just Timber now? Is he the only one left?
Yeah,
I think.
Basically, yeah.
Right. And look, I think we need to go ahead in thinking he's not going to play this season. We do not rush him back.
I don't think he will, yeah.
No, we do not rush him back. But if there's some miracle, he's just amazing and and Arteta and the team that are managing him feel that he's ready, that's a bonus. We just take that as a bonus. But I think even with what we've got in defence, we've got so much interchangeability with a lot of the players. Tomiyasu, for example, can play pretty much everywhere. Kiwior can play different positions. Even Ben White can to a certain extent. I think we are so well set in defence, which is the foundation for any team. I think we're in good shape. We're in good shape. And even if something, God forbid, happens to one of the midfielders, Thomas Partey hopefully does step back in and he can take that role on, because we know Ben White's two positions anyway. He's the six and the eight, so he can interchange anyway if something catastrophic.
Rice, sorry.
I think he's Rice, sorry, yeah. Sorry, sorry, Rice. Yeah. Talking about Ben White. Sorry.
Well, you never Rice. Know with White, but yeah.
You never know. Well, I think he was a midfielder at one point, wasn't he? Anyway,
there a little bit. Yep.
Yes. No, sorry, Rice. I don't know where my mind was for a second there. So we've got his interchangeability. So Jack, I think this is the best shape we've been in for years.
Honestly, without doubt. I mean, we said earlier in the season we were picking up a lot of injuries that we kind of mentioned on here that we felt Mick Arteta was being a little bit more cautious with the collective team. And hopefully, you don't know, but hopefully that sort of comes to fruition in the latter stages of the season, you know, where he's given players an extra week. Like, if you look at Gabriel Jesus, right now, Gabriel Jesus last season started. Right, you're not even aware of the injury that he's having with his knee, and he's playing 90 minutes, you know, once a week minimum. Tomiyasu probably starting, you know, coming back from his calf injury, doesn't even get on against Porto. You know, Zinchenko probably coming in to start straight away in one of those Brentford or Porto games. He again, barely makes it on and looks a little bit rusty when he did, to be fair, against Porto. I just think all of those little things, you know, those little extra weeks that we're giving the players and extra time. And one, you know, you need the confidence in the current 11, but Kibior stepped up and others have stepped up. I do think when I look at it, the two players that, because like you, I feel like we're pretty solid in defence and we have options now. And even though I don't trust Zinchenko or Tomiyasu fitness-wise, the fact that they're both back makes you feel that, well, at least one of them's going to be fit, you know. So one of them should be ready if something happens back there. I think we look better with Jorginho at the base, and I think the way to rotate Jorginho, who also is not really capable of playing three games a week. I mean, you saw him get tired in Porto game, and he's, you know, the game got a bit stretched, and that's when he looks a little bit vulnerable. And I think that's where Thomas Partey needs to be able to find minutes. We need to be able to, at 60, 65 minutes, we need to be able to say Jorginho can come off, but we still want to play in the same way. Let's put Thomas Partey in there. And we can maintain Rice at the eight, because I think Rice personally has looked better at the eight. I think he looks great at the six, but I think sometimes our stability and our ball progression is sometimes better with Jorginho at the six. And Thomas Partey obviously has that capability as well. So I think he's one that I'd be looking at post-break to see, are we at 65? Are we trusting in Thomas Partey to be able to come on? And the other one would be Jesus for one of the front three. Because I think Havertz has proven that he's a three game a week player so far this season. I mean, his energy levels are unreal, even against Porto late on. I mean, he's constantly going, him and Odegaard are on like another level. But you know, Jesus is going to be needed, and he's so versatile. He can play across all those areas, because we have the ability to be able to say to Saka, take 20 minutes, Jesus on you come. You know, it doesn't have to be Havertz, does it? Jesus can come on in different areas. So I think those two are ones that I really want to see him trust in. One, Jesus, I know he trusts him, but does he trust him physically? And Thomas Partey, just does he trust him to get to the level? I think it's so hard to get to the level at this stage of the season when you've not played a game since, what was it, October or something, for Thomas Partey. That's why I've always said that I don't think Timber will play much. It's just such a long period out, and then you come into the final stretch of the season, and if you're really playing for stuff, it's so hard to involve players. I personally think we're probably, barring an injury, a big injury or two, touch wood that doesn't happen, I think we're probably beyond the Smith Rowe, Eddie and Kea Nelson sort of a stage. Fabio Vieira possibly, because I know he has more faith in him. But again, I think it's going to be very hard to see that sort of Hale end group get a lot of minutes in this closing stages, to be honest. But look, with the games coming thick and fast, we may have to trust one or two of them in some midweek games and things like that. So it'll be really interesting. White New Deal, the Southgate talking nonsense. I think people have overblown it a little bit, but absolute nonsense. I mean, the issue with him coming out and making a statement like that is, one, he clearly hadn't sort of spoken to Ben White about making such a statement on his behalf, or that it was on his behalf, just making such a sort of generalized broad statement. But also, everyone, it's been very well reported what happened with his assistant coach. And I personally have always felt there's been an issue amongst the City of players and Ben White. I think you've seen it when we played City. He's had a problem with almost every one of them. Foden, Walker, Grealish. He doesn't like any one of them. And I think there was something there, maybe the coach and him. But either way, I think it's ridiculous to come out. I think it's a public media masterclass from Arsenal to release the new deal on the day the squad announcement came out. I think we definitely knew something was going to be said because of Edu's conversation with Southgate or whatever it was. But ultimately, I completely back any player that doesn't want to play under Gareth Southgate. I wish Saka and Rice did the same thing. So I have absolutely no problem with it. Southgate's a donkey and he can do one, to be honest. But what's your thoughts, Neil? I think it's ridiculous, but I think he's just so cowardly because everyone knows already that there was some sort of hiccup or bust up or whatever. So don't ignore it and play it like Ben White doesn't want to be part of international football when you know that's not the case.
He didn't need to say it. He could have worded it so much differently. He could have not even said it. He just hasn't picked him, and that's the end of it and done with it, because it's not, exactly. Whatever Ben White's thoughts on it, maybe he doesn't want to play for England. Maybe he just doesn't want to play for them. Fine. But, you know, for the outside world, I think it's quite damning to say that about a player. You know, he might have aspirations in the future when he knows that Southgate's not going to be there any longer, and that can hurt someone's career, and I don't like it. You know, you don't do that to someone, and he could potentially be part of an England squad that could go on and win big things, and Southgate might have damaged that even before he's had the opportunity. It's pathetic. As you said, he's a coward. It was the easy way out for him, wasn't it? And he just could have just either shut his mouth and not said nothing, or he could have worded it in a much better way and a much more I think it was unprofessional for me. Like you said, it's not something that people don't know about, is it? It's just stupid. I think it's childish and immature. And I don't really want to say much more about it because he's an idiot, to be honest. And you're right. For me, it's a win because I don't want these international, these friendlies at this time of the season, Jack. It's so wrong. It's so bloody wrong. I'm sorry to swear. It really is. I mean, it's an annoyance. It's a hindrance for me. And potentially players can get injured and possibly put them out for the rest of the season. And how unfair is that? If you are in a fortunate position like ourselves where we're progressing well in one of the biggest cup competitions, and also we are, you know, in line to win the league. And if a player gets injured and misses out on that, that's so unfair because of a friendly, which doesn't really mean anything. I hate it. So yeah. I wish as well that Saka, Rice and Saka come out. I don't want them playing in these games. I hate it. Sorry.
Well, do you remember one of these similar time frame last year? Spain played Norway and Rodri made the worst challenge on Odegaard. A two-footed. I don't know how he got away with it. And I just looked who Spain got on Tuesday. Brazil. No wonder we removed all our players from the squad. Yeah, absolutely. You can do one, Rodri, because we know exactly what your agenda would be, your little scumbag. So I bet Mikel Arteta's looked at that and gone, not having you anywhere near that. Well, that bloke.
Oh, that's brilliant.
We'll deal with that once we get to the Etihad, but we ain't dealing with it beforehand, you know, that kind of thing.
Of course.
And it's rightly so. I mean, look, if they're going to do stupid things like play games, then we're going to pull out our players. That's it. We're going to pull out all our players and we're going to say to them, look, if you're good enough, you're going to be in these squads anyway. These are friendly. I wish we could do it with Rice and Saka. It was never going to happen. It was never going to happen with the England team. Rice and Saka had two of the four or five key parts of that team. And they just can't. Same with Odegaard and Norway's captain, you know. There's certain players you just can't do it with. You know, they've got, their conscience wouldn't be allowing of it. But some you can do it with. And, I think, you know, Gabriel's been absolutely ridiculously criticised when he played for Brazil. So I was really happy we pulled him out. Their fans have been great. I'm like, get him out of there. Get him. If they don't realise he's the best centre-back they got, get him out of Brazil. Let him keep losing tournaments like they have done for the last 12, 15 years, whatever. So get Gabriel well out of there. And Martinelli as well. Well, he's playing second fiddle to Vinicius Junior, who's a pretty good player. But, you know, and Jesus, who's he playing second fiddle to? Richarlison, get them out of there. Get them right out. If you're going to start being stupid and brainless, we'll take them away. Thank you very much. So, yeah, all that stuff is fantastic. So, but obviously, David Raya, I just thought that hopefully David Raya doesn't play for Spain because he's not usually their number one. So hopefully he doesn't play, but he might do in the friendly. So it's just all things to think about, isn't it? But yeah, ultimately, White, good, great that we've got him down to a deal. I think he's been a fantastic signing. We didn't buy him as a right back, but he's really adapted to that role and made it his own fantastically well. It's amazing how many sort of players we've had sort of surprise us in a way at right back. You know, Bellerin when he took Debushi's role, etc. He's gonna be in a Debushi nil. You know, when Saliba came in, many of us at that point thought it was kind of many could have thought it's kind of curtains for White, you know, and he rebound and rediscovered his role, and that's what top players do, isn't it? And became just as important, if not more important part of the side than he was previously, which is exactly what great players do. And I loved the video on him, and people saying it's cringy and stuff like that. I was like, that's just honest and from the heart. But it was good to see, you know, he's obviously a pretty quiet guy, and it's good to see players speak on his behalf about what sort of character he is and stuff like that. So I got no issues with Ben White. England and Southgate, I could talk about their idiocy all day, but
you love it. Yeah, that's what you
I guess that's such a joke. Like, honestly, I said a tweet the other day. I think Andy Goldstein, who's such a donkey, isn't he, on TalkSport, was talking how England's winning is like the, you know, the best thing, better than watching his kids being born or something rubbish.
Oh, and my God.
I don't know what he was saying, but I was like, I'd rather Arsenal win a corner than England win a World Cup or a Euros. And anyone else that thinks otherwise, some more. Honestly, I couldn't care less what England do. It's all about Arsenal. That's all it's ever been about.
Me too.
No, yeah, I couldn't care less. Of course, you know, if England are in a World Cup final and Saka scores the winger, I'll be jumping.
Of course.
Of course I will, but I don't long for that at all, you know. I couldn't care less. We don't play the football that wants, you know, really attaches you to a national team. We haven't done for years. We've never had a manager that wants to play football, really. We always do sort of PR appointments, don't we? How did Southgate end up with a job anyway? Look at him. Look, I mean, he's not an international manager, is he? He shouldn't even be managing under 21s. I mean, he can't manage his own accounts, probably, the guy. I mean, he's a joke. So he's just ridiculous. But Neil, before we go,
don't hold back, Jack.
No, I mean, it's just, I can't stand him. But we're far away from it. But I guess we've got to do a prediction for Man City away, haven't that we? I mean, we've got to do it because I don't think we'll get back on. I don't think we'll get back on or in anything crazy happening. But so should we do it then? Should we do it? Should we do a prediction for City away? Possibly the biggest game of the season. So don't hold back.
Oh, wow. You know, my heart, I'd love to win. I can't do predictions other than win, so I'll do it. I'll say my head is gunning for a draw. I'll be honest. My head is gunning for a draw. I think
which would be an improvement in a way, but yeah.
But, well, it would be because we've taken 4 points off them. So, you know, that's still, it's still a win-win for us against our battle with them, at least, anyway. But I can't do a draw, so I will go for a... Come on, a late 2-1 win to just get everyone so excited and celebrating as we always do because we get chastised for it, so bring that on even more. Yeah, a late 2-1 win. Why not? A late 2-1 win, and I would say who scores? I think I'm going to go for someone I want. Gabriel.
Yeah.
Gabriel. Yeah, Gabriel scoring from a set piece. And then maybe one of the forwards scoring the winner in the last minute. Have it scoring the winner in the last minute. How about that? 2-1.
Mate, the dreams are made of. Take that all day. All right. Yeah, I'll go. I mean, this our record there is terrible,
shocking,
isn't it? But yeah, it's really bad. But it's got to change at some point. So yeah, I'll go. It's weird because, you know, if you win this one, you really put yourself in the bracket for. We're having a chance, don't you? A really big chance in the title race. But I'll go 1-0 Arsenal. 1-0 to the Arsenal.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Do you know what, Jack? Look, listen. If the worst case scenario occurs, if that, I don't want to say lose, I don't want to say that word because I don't want to be negative. But if it did, hopefully it'll only be by the odd goal. Because all that work we've done to produce a really good advantage on the goal difference, if at least we can keep that intact, that'll be a little bit of a small consolation for us. But look, head, as I said, draw, win will be just be a dream come true. You've got to believe, right? Got to believe,
yeah. Yeah, we've got to believe. I'll go 1-0. I'll go Saliba.
You're on, Saliba. Oh,
go on.
Yeah.
Go on in. Go on in.
Yeah, I like that. I like that as well.
Go on in. Yeah, so we'll see. It's very far away, so we've got time to sort of sit on it and think about, you know, where we're at and take state. But ultimately, you know, in the quarterfinals, we're right up there in the league and long way to go, obviously. It's probably, from a neutral's perspective, a fantastic watch to see three teams right at the top of the league and fantastic to see Tottenham get battered at the week. I didn't even know they were playing. I was at work and I kind of had
a... I didn't know either.
Oh, they're playing. I was like, they're 2-0 down. Oh, dear. The unfortunate thing is Unai Emery's doing an Unai Emery. And,
he is, isn't he?
You know, and he's really going to, you know, do his normal thing. And the way we're looking, it's crazy because in the Champions League, they kind of want us really to go further in the Champions League for the coefficient, which means fifth will probably get Champions League as well. I believe if we get through the next round, there's a pretty good chance.
How ironic is that?
which is the irony. So, but you know, I don't particularly care who gets sort of those spots, really. I mean, if it's top five, you know, one of Tottenham or United at least are going to get him. But I'd like one of them to be out of it and pop Villa into one of them at least. So that would be that would be funny. But yeah, Neil, it's been great. We're at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter, Purely Arsenal on YouTube. Please click there, subscribe. You get it a little bit earlier. You can listen and watch us. Sorry for any staggering. We keep getting this 40 minutes in. Yeah. Staggers take happens for like 5 seconds and then stops. We've done everything we can to try to readjust it. At this point, I'm just blaming Zoom. I don't know where else to blame. So, and I'll pay for it. So somewhere out Zoom is a bit weird, but I don't know. I have a look at that side of things, but apologies for that. But I think sound wise we're pretty good. But yeah, at Purely Arsenal FP, ask us your questions there. Thanks to everyone that listens on YouTube and on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all that. And we'll be back after the game at City.
Thank you.
Game at City. Keep your fingers crossed. Neil, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. Up the Arsenal. Up the Arsenal. Keep the faith.